Thanks, Alex and Tim, for inviting me to create this podcast. In keeping with the oral and aural nature of that medium, I've chosen some poems that, for me, come alive more off the page than on it. And at your request, Tim, I've selected poems that try to convey a sense of place. Let me begin with Scotland, from which I hail. Here's a poem that suggests how its history melds with its present, to let the old romance of the Hebrides live on. Songs of the Isles. It's Celtic chaos at Loch Duich, the music session's finishing. The barman pours folks out the door. They drive away, diminishing, vanishing into darkening glens, where clearances once shattered the homes and lives of crafting peoples. The sheep now flourish, scattered, like grace notes fallen from fiddle airs, or from songs of bygone aeons, of Flodden's and Culloden's fields, and spray-sodden Hebrideans. All night they stamp their musical feet, and swirl the smoke and ale, with claps and birls, and hughs and skirls, now silent, still, and stale. And I return to Plockton's shore, where I sit on a stone and wonder whether I would have made a man among men in the days of plight and plunder, in the days when allegiances could shift like seafarers under sail, changing course to avail themselves of the winds that would prevail. This very dawn I stood upon the buttress across the bay, the watch crag of Loch Carron's narrows, where lookouts perhaps one day had sentried these Viking longship routes from Ivor Blacktooth's pillagers, as his ravaging bands swung inland to ravish the wives of villagers. Before me lie the sheltered coves where the sailboats raced today. Now their wooden hulls heave sideways as the tide wash ebbs away, but their lapstrake lines and their gleaming curves seem to come alive again, to take to the waves of the inner sound like a timeless song's refrain. And I see two square sails billowing as they swallow long sea miles, the dragon ship of Somerled, lord of all these isles, passes Ailen Donan's fort. 128 oarsmen bend their arms to the beat of the gong to ram the fleeing Norsemen, and Cathula beats that gong in tune to muscle and sweat and wave. Her tawny hair howls in the dark. She's his mistress and his brave second mate in battles and surprise nighttime attacks that set the coarse invaders to their oars with flailing backs. With 200 Irish gallow glasses and with smoke and sleight of hand, he routed 1,000 Vikings, and with a will to understand the needs of men who rally to the stronger shield and blade, he won his phrase in minds, not bays, by allegiances he made. I see beached goblet sterns becalmed, like the local sleeping faces. Our hearts in song's communion rose. I saw the shimmering traces of unfulfilled but fervent longing in glances bare and vulpine, watching sea lochs simmering red, dark as quakes of mulled wine. And I realize that just like them, I'm another whose dreams of glory are doomed to nullity, for they come too late in history's story. That I can love their songs and tunes, but I'll never swear an oath or wager countless lives upon a windblown clansman's troth, or snap my neck from the axe's path, or swing my sword in wrath, or walk among the dead and maimed in the battle's aftermath, or choose my friends for their usefulness, for repute of non-betrayal, or commit my hand to venturings where death awaits all who fail. And so I rise from my foreshore stone with a drowsiness in my head, and I cross the road and climb the stairs and go to my safe warm bed, while the mute musicians lie in their glens of bleating song, and dream of fiddles, the wind-filled flute, the boron, and the gong. Here's one set in Canada, where I now live. Strathcona Park is a wilderness area on Vancouver Island. It too has a history that speaks to me of the past. Strathcona. Well met there, you mountains, you crags of Strathcona, alone in dominions of stone, snow, and mist. Your highnesses call me to sky-smiting summits that thrust through the storm winds like God's angry fist. You've withstood the eons as hailstones assailed you and rain channel adzes carved scars in your flanks. Your canyons bear pathways eroded by footprints, the imprints of pilgrims on life's river banks. From warfare, the Comox sent women and children to Alpine Asylum. You cradled their womb, but all of them vanished, and legend said giants from ice caves had tossed them down cliffs to their doom. So now it's forbidden, that plateau in shadow of Mount Albert Edward, the lofty abode where canvas-clad climbers crawled 2,000 meters and prospectors daydreamed of striking your lode. Your names, they're survivors. There's Lone Wolf and Ursus, Tai overlooking the Gold River's gorge, the Golden Hind, Black Cat, Augur Point and Elkhorn, Moihia and Kukjai, and King, Crown and George. Now wilderness, parkland, your name symbolizes the union of coastlines, the pioneer's hike. Old Iron Strathcona, Canadian Pacific Railway's first baron, who drove the last spike. Today, I feel kinship with those who have trodden your ramparts and ridges, your cirques and your scree. In Paradise Meadows, this great amphitheater, they once stood where I stand and marveled like me. The Highlands of Scotland were once covered in forests of Caledonian pine. Those forests disappeared. They were burned for fuel in battles, they were used for construction, and they were decimated by free-range goats that the clansmen ran at one time. I became aware of them acutely one year when my brother and I hiked across the hills of the Northern Highlands, and we could see stands of these old Caledonian pines, particularly on islands in the lochs where no one had gone to get them. This poem is about those forests. Caledonian pines. The pines stand tall upon the Lochan Isles, the ancient woods of Caledon, they're all that's left untouched by centuries of fire, man's pall, a shroud of smoke from bens to kyles. Age-toughened, brittle, jagged, grey of limb, half fossilized, these hardy few survive, remaindered by their moats of mountain rain, alive, small stands, their yield not worth the swim. Held high before their former fiefdom's hills, last green crowns cock to high ground, heather skin. Old clans alone, their branches seed with moans, the wind that bears them barren freedom's chills. There's an exhilarating speed to the cycles of the wildlife on Vancouver Island. You can tell to the week and sometimes to the day when the wild roses will bloom, when the herring will spawn, when the bird migrations will come and go, and when the salmon will run. There's no room for tardiness or procrastination. I've run the shorelines here summer and winter for over 20 years, and it's on those runs that I've felt most in tune with the great turning pace of this place. Here's a poem about that feeling. West Coast Run. I'm flying the footpath that curves by the creek on the mulch of the maples of fall, and the stumps of the old growth which stretched to the skies, and the stumps of the old growth, their cutouts like eyes, are staring as if they could watch us. But the hand luggers felled them from springboards, they felled them by kerfing above where their boles were broad butted. But the hand luggers felled them, their boards in those notches, but the hand luggers felled them, they died. Now over the boulders that shoulder the shore, an octopus still on the stones, with its body sack slumped, with its suckers displayed, with its body sack slumped and its arms disarrayed in a tide-tangled twist on the gravel, this red devil fish, this dread devil fish, a mollusk with muscle for clutching its captives, this red devil fish which the gulls will unravel, this red devil fish is no more. But there's life in this landscape and wings for the wind, for the herring have silvered the seas, and the Arctic-bound goose flocks have swallowed their spawn, and the Arctic-bound goose flocks will mill and move on, and will nest on more northerly shoals, with immense susurrations, intense susurrations, their thousands are thronging, assembling and trembling, with immense susurrations, the multitude rolls, with immense susurrations, they rise, and I fly like that flock as I run on these rocks, as my lifetime is measured in miles, and I sing on the wind for the decades I've jogged, and I sing on the wind for the joys that I've logged, and rejoice while the forests regrow, and I'll run on this coast, on this life and death coast, till time with its tentacles twines round my tendons, and I'll run on this coast in my mind when I slow, and I'll run on this coast when I'm old. I've been a fly fisher in both Scotland and Canada. It's a pursuit that, in my mind, has a close connection with, one might say alliterates with, metrical poetry. Here's a poem that somewhat playfully suggests how. Wizardry. The pocket swirls in whorls of ruffled riffle, flanked by funneling flumes of race and runnel, while fly line dangles down the boulder channel. It slaloms the shoulders where lissome waters carom and sparkling spangles jostle, solar blossom. Then all the elasticity of sunlight flows down his arm and flexes at the sweet spot as he double hauls and loads his fly rod slingshot, taut as the boom and gurdy of a trawler it catapults, extracts the line like a molar. As his backcast springs and bends its graphite back, the rod draws a starry flash like a lightning smack, and mints a constellation, a zodiac forms in the air as his forward flick flex arcs with droplets blizzarding down in wizard sparks. The thaumaturgic era casts its slight, transforms his rod and line to a pen of light. He lifts his fountain wand and starts to write. His strokes are swift and slippery as Houdini's, his motions smooth and shadowy as a genie's, and he spells his casts in shade on jade reflections, in line rips shined with sprays of splash-torn sequins, in glittery sweeps and swoops by jittery aspens, his flourished cursives slish-slash through the haze, until the fly free-falls through the burnished blaze. It drops like a seed on the pocket from the skies. Will a sizable sorcerer's prize materialize? He focuses his Wiccan powers, arise! The grand surprise he strives to bring about, he strikes at the magic trick of the vanished trout. Place embraces both land and sea, so I'll continue with a poem of the sea. On the Atlantic seaboard of North America, in the last days of sail, there was great rivalry between the schooners of Canada and those of the US. These boats would fish for cod on the Grand Banks, a dangerous enterprise which led to thousands of deaths today commemorated by monuments in both countries. The schooners would race each year in an event called the Fisherman's Race. One year, an America's Cup race was postponed for wind speeds that would have been taken in stride by the schooners, and after that, it was dubbed the Race for Real Sailors. The Canadian boats were built for large cargoes of fish packed in salt, and the US boats were built smaller and faster to bring those catches fresh to market on ice. For decades, the American boats held sway. Then Canada built the Blue Nose. She was big and fast. To the Blue Nose. With 140 feet of hull and 1/4 acre of sail, you'd forge up under 4 lores against head seas in a 50-knot gale with a ballast load of Atlantic cod, and pitching to the rail, you'd stand on with the strength of a church and the heft of a breaching whale. And never had such a spectacle graced the Nova Scotian coast as your flying jib off Lunenburg. It was Canada's pride and a boast that our great salt banker could fly as fleet as an ice-filled Gloucester ghost. And you'd lead round the high flyer poles, then schoon wing and wing to the finishing post. But the price of the cod was cross tree high. To harvest your Grand Banks quarry, you'd launch and loose your flying sets, and with flambeau lit each dory would anchor a mile of baited line, as their crews hallooed in the hoary vapors that rolled from Labrador. Then they'd leadline for death or glory. They that go down to the sea in ships is inscribed on the man at the wheel in Gloucester to mourn the 5,000 drowned in filling a continent's creel, and in Lunenburg harbour 1,200 names more are dancing a stony reel in a compass of pillars. If ever they rise, may they climb with your top men and feel your halyards thrum and your backstays strain on the breakers of Banker Row as you close haul with a bone in your teeth and your weather bilge bared to the blow. Globalization has given us ready access to the biggest and best of all things, but I think a strong attachment to place depends on appreciation of where you live your own life, regardless of the greenness of the grass on the other side of the world's fences. This poem, written about sunset at one of my favorite places on earth, the estuary of the Little Qualicum River, tries to express that. Qualicum sunset. This evening sunset, though ethereal rose, is not unique. I've seen its like before, emblazoning the shore. Others eclipse it, robed and grandiose, descending suns, which, as they disappear, draw a train across the polar ice for half a year. Long silken night that lets in astral rain. I see no Ellesmere, but island smolder, anthracite to bank the sunset's fire, as clouds make ready to retire, the ebb tide bears a sandbar like a shoulder, and ingle benches empty. Seabird flocks seek nooks of calm, They search for marsh and car with goodnight squawks, and sky and sea close like a carmine clam. In another life, I'd clamber Brooks Range Talus, or run the Sog of a Nyrktok by canoe, my paddle breaking through the sunset and aurora borealis. But this is my life, and this fair coast my home, and the setting sun deserves to be viewed not with an eye to Rome, but as if it were the first and only one. Like others who are emigrant and immigrant both, I feel the pull of the land of my birth and sometimes think that in old age I'd like to close the circle and make it the land of my death. This next poem deals with that thought. A few words will help. A Culdee is a hermit monk of the 8th century Highlands. A Birlin is a Highland galley, similar in many respects to a Viking longship. A holm is a small island, and a voe is a bay. A drover was someone who drove cattle from the Highlands to markets in southern Scotland and England. The drovers were rough characters who covered hundreds of miles on foot, sometimes swimming ocean channels with the cattle. They sustained themselves by bleeding the cattle and mixing the blood with oats and fat. History is its own ways of living on. If you go into a British fish and chip shop today and see black pudding, that's where it came from. Here's the poem. It closes this podcast. When I am old, hie me to the hill ground, the high hill ground of Scotland, to battle bladed wind blasts my forebears fought before me, to stagger stammer footed across the ancient Highlands, across their schists and drifting bones, across their shifting ruin stones, where witchily the grey pine crones still call me to my history. Leave me there to wayfare the curlew plainted wildmoor, to smell the sweet bog myrtle beside the peaty burn, to stumble crumbling scree slopes that roll with rutting stag roars, and rediscover drove roads and moths embossing lost abodes, where blood-fed drovers rested loads, bound south and trudging their return. Let me find a lone shore where fishermen lie buried in graves of wave-flung flotsam with neither name nor past, to stand there like a Culdee as mist trails move unhurried on island hills and holms and voes, where headlands creaked with yells of crows as Birlins swooned in hell-bent blows that heaved the shore and cleaved the mast. Bear me to the black shed, where the blacksmith shod the plough-horse to plod long narrow furrows that pleat the folding field, and when my storm approaches, I'll stand before its raw force by furnace flames of bygone ways and anvils ringing down the days that forged my soul and bent these bays. I'm of this land, it's here I'll yield to the stubble and seeds of the past.